You're listening to The Meadows Podcast on the Porch with Bob Arnold and friends. Our current series is called The Great Sadness, where we hear people's stories about loss, pain, and suffering, and how God works through such tragedies. We're currently offering a four-week series on the Enneagram, a spiritual roadmap to discover your true self, taught by Bev Gorman. Coming up is our Spiritual Development Forum, a four-week workshop series to develop a deeper divine intimacy. Both series are taking place at Grace Fellowship Church in Timonium, Maryland, on Wednesday evenings. To sign up for upcoming events and learn more about The Meadow, go to www.meadow4.org.
Well, hello again. This is Bob Arnold, and we're back on the porch with the Meadows Podcast, and a very good friend of mine and a guy who has really been one of the leaders of spiritual formation in Baltimore is with us. He's also been very instrumental in forming everything that's gone on at Cambridge School. He teaches at Towson and does some work at Hopkins, but Scott has a lot to say to us about the pilgrimage that he's been on over the last 3 or 4 years, and you know, we were having breakfast and we started talking about it and just realized this is a very, very, it's going to be a very powerful thing for a lot of people to deal with in terms of helping them deal with the grief that they're going through, whatever their great sadness might be. And so, Scott, I'm glad you're here with me today. And so why don't you tell us, you know, begin telling us about your story that's occurred over the last 3 or 4 years.
Wow. Thanks, Bob. It's great to be here. Great to be with you. So my journey with sadness and grief began 4.5 years ago. It was February. We had known that my wife had been dealing with some headaches, but we had no idea that we were about to find out that something very serious was going on. So I was at school, got a call. I needed to come and check on Peggy, and turned out she couldn't speak. I thought she had had a stroke. Fortunately, we had a dear friend who at Hopkins who said, "Oh, you need to get her to the ER right away and tell them that it's a stroke." And within an hour, they had already scanned her head and told me that she had glioblastoma. Well, 4.5 years ago, I had no idea what glioblastoma is. Right. So I thought, okay, this is obviously bad from the expression on the nurse's face when she told me. But I thought, okay, so it's going to be serious. But I certainly didn't think that it was fatal. But then I called her brother, who's a physician, and all he did was groan. Then I called my good friend at Hopkins back, and he immediately said, "I am so sorry." And so I was starting to get more of a sense,
wow,
this is serious.
Yeah.
It began a 10-month journey for us from the time that Peggy was diagnosed with glioblastoma to the time that she passed away. And actually, as I look back on that part of the journey, those 10 months were an amazing gift. There was a lot of hardness along the way. But the level of intimacy, the sudden focus in being able to appreciate each and every day and just all the amazing ways that God provided for us. Within a couple of days, our friend at Hopkins had found this amazing surgeon at Hopkins. And so she had the initial brain surgery within 5 days. We had an amazing team at Hopkins, so an amazing oncologist. And these were people that were very skilled, but also very kind.
Yeah.
So it was an amazing combination. And so we did the normal process that you do with glioblastoma, the surgery, then the radiation, then the chemotherapy. And again, I'm still thinking, I'm taking it a day at a time and a step at a time, and it really wasn't registering with me that this was going to be terminal.
Yeah.
Because the doctors weren't talking in those terms. They would just give us ranges, and some people do survive. So I'm thinking, oh, well, if anybody's going to survive, it'd be Peggy. I mean, she was really healthy going into this. So for those 5 months, it was basically focusing on the treatment, taking it step by step, and I continued to be optimistic. But then come July, the symptoms returned, and I had to take Peggy back to the emergency room. And in the middle of the night, the doctor came in and said, I have really bad news for you. The tumors have grown. And then I knew it was terminal. Yeah. But again, we had an amazing support network and friends and a good friend who was willing to talk to me at a more detailed level than the oncologist at that point actually explained to me how Peggy was going to die physically, what would happen, which really helped me. And he strongly encouraged me that we would begin hospice immediately. And so when I told the oncologist, he was initially nervous, like, why did you start hospice? Because he wanted to make sure that we didn't do anything that would inhibit ongoing treatment. But we quickly found out that hospice was able to work with him so that anything he wanted to do for quality of life for Peggy, he was still able to do. But I'm so glad we did that because, again, we were provided with this amazing nurse from Gilcrest who really got to know us. And so she walked with us for the next 5 months. And she promised me, and she kept her promise, that she would be able to tell us within a reasonable period of time when the girls should all come home. And so three weeks before Peggy passed away, the hospice nurse had a sense, okay, it's time, call the girls. We had had an amazing year together. I mean, the girls all had very understanding employers, and there were a lot of visits home. We got to see our youngest graduate from college. We got to see our oldest graduate from medical school. With the help of hospice early on, we were able to take Peggy on trips to visit each of the girls because our two graduates were both in new cities. So she got to see their new apartments and where they were living and that whole context. So a lot of time with the girls. I was able to take a leave of absence from my full-time teaching position at Cambridge. And so I had a very clear focus. My focus was to serve Peggy and to make possible whatever Peggy wanted to do. And she had amazing, crystal clear focus that she wanted to make the most of every day.
You know that what you're saying, I experienced that, you know, one day when I came over your house and just a, you know, in the midst of, I'm sure, which was deep sadness and deep grief, a very, very powerful presence of the Holy Spirit was there. And, you know, I personally had just a wonderful time just talking with Peggy and Peggy's spirit in the midst of this. And, you know, I think two avenues I'd like for you to talk about is, and I think you've been saying this, is a lot of people are very, very afraid of death. But I think what we find in death is a very, very deep presence of God. And we find a holy time. And for many people, it's the holiest time that they experience in their life. So, you know, and then I think the second piece of this, you know, I don't think we want to mislead people that this is a beautiful, wonderful time. But let's face reality. For a family, it's very, very, very despairing and disruptive. They realize everything that you had for dreams were all, you know, everything's changed.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's true. And it's, and we'll get to this. I mean, I've definitely felt that much more since Peggy's passing. But because of the way that Peggy was able to accept what was happening, and instead of focusing on what she was losing, there was this crystal clear focus on what can I be thankful for today? How can I make the most of this day? She had very limited energy by that time, by the time we got to the fall. And so she had to be really strategic. Like, she thought, okay, who does God want me to meet with today?
Right.
And so each of those conversations were amazing for me to witness.
Right.
But in many ways, I feel like I was carried by Peggy.
Yeah. And, you know, what you're saying is, when I was with Peggy, it was like, you know, I was the only person she was ever going to meet with. You
know? And you were for that day. I mean, that was very clear. That was her one appointment.
Yeah.
And, for that day.
But, you know, just such a powerful spirit in the face of this. I mean, here she's going to be leaving her husband and leaving her three daughters, and such courage in the midst of this is amazing. And, I mean, you know, it was just an amazing thing to see where she was spiritually.
I think for me, the part that was hard those last few months is, with the support of hospice, I became the primary caregiver. And so the anxiety I felt was fear that somehow I would fail Peggy in the management of the pain, and but as far as being able to embrace her death as a positive thing for her, that was made so much easier because she was not resisting it. Yeah. And it was not that she didn't want to live. Like, she was determined to do whatever she could do to have as much time with me and the girls as she could. And as long as there was a reasonable quality of life, but there was no grasping.
Yeah. Now, what do you think, you know, a lot of people are in that situation. I mean, obviously are nowhere near that. What do you think was the breakthrough thing for her to be able to put her in this place where she was really in the midst of this struggle for life, thriving spiritually in ways that were unbelievable?
I'm thinking there had to have been foundations, and we'd been married almost 30 years, but still I can't really know the most intimate internal parts of her. And I was amazed watching like what bubbled up to the surface. But from very early on, this idea, and I know Jesus' calling was very influential for her, and this theme of gratitude and thankfulness and choosing to focus on what we have to be grateful for and thankful for, that became a daily exercise for Peggy. Another thing that became a daily experience for us is she wanted to experience communion every single day.
Right.
And so that's how we started every day. And before I would go to work, we would make sure that we had communion together.
And she was, you know, a Protestant faith, so communion up until this point wasn't an important part of her pilgrimage. It was something that jumped into this.
Yes, not to the degree. I mean, and she had witnessed this with a very dear friend of ours, Maureen Donahue, for whom communion and regular communion became very important when she was dealing with cancer too. And Peggy, she embraced the mystery, and she just marveled that in some special way, Christ's life was being, she was physically taking it in. And she looked at that, and I remember Maureen talking about that as bringing life to her body. not just to her spirit. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, we have some more conversations with Scott over the next couple of weeks, and you can just see how much of a treasure Scott is. And really, like, you know, my experience with Peggy, this is just a remarkable encounter with death that few people have the courage to really enter into. So, Scott, thank you for being with us today, and look forward to more times.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah.
Tune in next week to hear part 2 of Scott's story.